Signs of the Times is sponsored in part by Bob Johnson Insurance, an independent, full-service agency featuring Erie Insurance products, is celebrating over 55 years insuring East Tennesseans from auto, home, life, and so much more. For a personalized, no-obligation quote, they can be reached at 865-922-3111 or online at bobjohnsonins.com.
Meds for Stat has underwritten this edition of Signs of the Times. Meds for Stat is medications to prepare you for such a time as this. Meds for Stat provides access to medication kits containing an emergency supply of possibly life-saving antibiotics as well as other medications and a treatment guide. Go to medsforstat.com or phone 1-888-RX4STAT.
Current events,
personal values,
political and social issues,
technology, wars and tensions.
Join us for the next hour to discuss and learn how the things happening in our world today point to God's prophetic word as signs of the times.
Follow the signs.
Signs are getting louder, but strangely, fewer people seem to be paying attention. Even inside the church, there's growing skepticism about Bible prophecy at the very moment the evidence is becoming impossible, my friends, impossible to ignore. Today, Jimmy Evans joins me to unpack the key signs that are unfolding right now. So many things that even in the prophecy world, people are ignoring, and why they matter, and why this generation may be the generation that is going to see the return of Christ. Jimmy, thank you for joining me. This is fantastic. First time here at Hope for Our Times.
I know. Tom, it's an honor. I just enjoy your ministry so much, and it's just an honor to be here.
Well, I've been watching you for years, and to finally be able to communicate like that, like this, is great. Let's just dive right into this.
Okay.
I want to ask you, can you share your personal journey? And then from here, we're going to take off. But your personal journey, how you first got interested in prophecy, and even in Israel. You're one of the leaders in speaking for Israel. And also, what has kept you pursuing this subject all of these years?
Well, I was a heathen. I grew up heathen, and you know, my family didn't go to church. They would have told you they were Christians, but we were not Christians. And I was, you know, wild and, you know, just as an athlete and a guy just growing up, you know, just doing all the typical stuff that you do. But at 19 years old, a week before my wife and I got married, I received Christ. And I mean, I gave my entire life to Christ, got radically saved. And so probably about a month later, someone told me that I should read the Bible. And I didn't know that. You know, they said, you need to go get a Bible. So my wife and I went to the Bible bookstore, and we walked into the Bible bookstore. And I was surprised how big it was, first of all, because I thought there'd be a few Bibles in there. I was also surprised how many books were in there that weren't the Bible, just books. So my wife went over to look for a Bible, and I looked over at the wall. And I remember I've been saved for about a month. I didn't know what a Jew was. I'd never heard of the nation of Israel. And I saw this poster on the wall of this bookstore. It said Israel. It was kind of a beige poster. It said Israel and had a menorah. And Tom, I just fell in love. It was like a supernatural experience, like I'd seen the most beautiful woman in the world. And I just fell totally in love. And I walked up to the counter. The owner of the bookstore was there. And I said, that poster you have on the wall over there, I said, Israel? He said, Israel. I said, well, what's that? He said, it's a nation. I said, well, so? He said, well, in the Middle East. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, Jesus, that's where Jesus is from. I said, really? And from that moment forward, when I didn't know anything about Israel, anything about Jewish people, see, no one can tell me that I love Israel because I was in the Bible Belt or that I was indoctrinated or anything. I had none of that. I had no idea who they were, what they were. But I believe that a love for Israel is a supernatural thing, a spiritual thing. I also believe that anti-Semitism is a spiritual thing, a very dangerous thing. And so I fell in love with Israel. Well, at that same visit to the bookstore, my wife was looking for Bibles, and I saw a book called The Late Great Planet Earth. And I believe that was published in 1973, somewhere around then. That's when I was saved. So I picked that book up. I've always been interested in the future. Even when I was lost, I always thought about the future. And I picked up the book, I started thumbing through it, and it just was fascinating to me that God knew the future and that he had told us what it was. So I went home and devoured The Late Great Planet Earth. I didn't know one scripture. I didn't know where Genesis 1 was. So I read through this book, and it just fascinates me. That's how I got started in Bible prophecy. And see, to me, it's fun. I love Bible prophecy. It's interesting. It's fascinating. It's happening right before our eyes every single day. So as a pastor for 30 years, I would preach maybe 4 or 6 messages a year on prophecy, read books. I was always reading books about it. And so then when I stopped being a pastor, we did XO Marriage. My son came to me and said, Dad, you've been teaching on prophecy for all these years. I've been studying it for over 50 years. My wife and I have been married 53 years. And so he said, why don't you do something with that? So that's when I began Tipping Point, began writing books on the subject. But it's always been fascinating to me since I read the first book, Late Great Planet Earth. And I love it. And the thing about it is, Tom, you know this better than anybody, and that is, it's happening right before our eyes. And back in the 1980s, when I started preaching on Bible prophecy, I remember saying in the 1980s, Tom, you know, it's just the birth pains get worse. And I believe that it's going to get worse than it is right now before Jesus returns. And in my mind, I kept thinking, how could it get any worse? You know, we've got R-rated movies on television, you know, on home box office and all this stuff. Look at the world today and how much it mirrors exactly what Bible prophecy says. So love for the Jews and love for Bible prophecy started for me in 1973, and it's never stopped.
Jimmy, that is great. Very encouraging. It was The Late Great Planet Earth that got me inspired before I was a Christian. And it was when the documentary came out, I think probably 78 or something like that is when I saw it. But that was so, it really got me intrigued. I just love everything that you shared. That is so encouraging, so true. You know, it's kind of funny thinking back to when I first started teaching Bible prophecy. I would do once a year, New Year's Eve prophecy update. In January, I would start saving stories for the upcoming New Year, 12 months out, because it would take that long to compile 12 stories.
Yeah.
And now it's all day long. That was just great. You have a book, Haman's Lies and Your Dressing Rising Anti-Semitism. What compelled you to talk about that now?
The rise of anti-Semitism in the church, Tom. It's the anti-Semitism in the world is off the charts. Since October 7th of 2023, there has been a supernatural rise in anti-Semitism, which is one of the major signs of the end times. But the rise of anti-Semitism in the church is shocking. And we wrote this book to counter the lies. It's called Haman's Lies. Haman was the official in the Persian court convinced King Ahasuerus to destroy all the Jews. And of course, Esther came to the rescue, but he was a Agagite, which means he was an Amalekite. And the Amalekites were the generational enemies of Israel. They were the first nation that attacked Israel when they left Egypt, and they attacked them from the rear. They attacked the old people, the young people, and the sick, the frail, And just like Hamas, just like the terrorists of today, they were known for being cruel, and they were known for attacking the vulnerable. And so God says, I'm going to have war with Amalek from generation to generation. And you remember God commanded Saul in 1 Samuel 15 to utterly destroy the Amalekites, every man, woman, child, infant, and every animal, and to spare no one. And the king, Saul went, he killed the people, spared King Agag, and he spared a lot of the livestock that he wasn't supposed to. That's why God rejected him. But Agag, when it says that Haman was an Agagite, he was an Amalekite. The interesting thing about the Amalekites is, if you remember the story of Isaac and Esau, is you have Jacob and Esau. Jacob and Esau, Esau hated Jacob because he took his birthright, and he wanted to kill him. And Jacob had to flee to keep from getting killed by him. Esau had a son named Eliphaz, and Eliphaz had a son named Amalek. The Amalekites were direct descendants of Esau, and the hatred, this is where anti-Semitism began. The hatred that Esau had for Jacob was transferred to Eliphaz, and then to Amalek, and then to Haman. And so we call it Haman's lies, because when Haman went before King Ahasuerus to convince him to kill all the Jews, that his mission was to exterminate all the Jews, he said, this is Esther 3, Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws, so that it is not to the king's profit to tolerate them. If it please the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed. And so Haman's lies, what he says there is a template for all anti-Semitism from then until now. And here's what he said about the Jews. They're different. They're different from other people. Okay, they're not like other people. They're also disloyal. They don't keep your laws, and they're dangerous. It's not to your profit to keep these people around. It's dangerous to keep them, and they're disposable. Those are the four lies that Haman tells. Now, in our book, we talk about the 25 lies being told about Israel right now, and how for believers to understand how to respond to those lies and to believe the truth historically and biblically. But you go back to Haman, this spirit, anti-Semitism is a demon spirit. It is spiritual in nature. And it began all the way back with Esau, the Amalekites, Haman, and today you see it, university campuses, countries all over the world. 46%, this was a poll done by the Anti-Defamation League. They interviewed 58,000 people in 103 countries, and they found that 46% of people in the world have significantly negative attitudes about the Jews. Tom, there are 8 billion people in the world. There are only 16 million Jews. How can such a tiny group of people have such a bad reputation worldwide? It's supernatural. They're the chosen people of God. They're from the very beginning when God made his covenant with Abraham. It was an everlasting covenant. A Jew cannot be saved unless they receive Jesus as their Messiah. Okay, because the church began with the Jews. Some believed, some didn't believe. But even if they're not saved, they're special by covenant. And the reason that we respect them so much is because, first of all, God told us to respect them. The Bible, you know, Genesis to Revelation, the Jews are in there, and they're important for Bible prophecy. They're important for many reasons. But we wrote this book to empower, first of all, to counter the lies that are causing so many Christians to become anti-Semitic. Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes, all these people out there. In our family, in our larger family, we've had two conversations in the last 2 weeks about anti-Semitism, and people in our family, our circle of family, that were being influenced by lies. So Christians today, as never before, need to be aware of the fact that Israel matters. They're special by covenant. God blesses those who bless them. He curses those who curse them. These are some people say, well, these are not the actual Jews of the Bible. Israel has been perpetually inhabited by Jewish people for over 3,000 years. These are genetically, historically, archaeologically, biblically, these are the same Jews that God made the covenant with. And his covenant still holds to this day. And so Haman's Lies is a book that exposes the nature, the ancient roots of anti-Semitism. And we talk in there about how the spirit of Esther must arise. And so when Haman made his plot against the Jewish people, Mordecai, her uncle, was the reason that Haman was so furious, because Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him because he knew he was an Amalekite. And he wouldn't bow down to him. And when the plot was exposed that all the Jews were going to get killed, Mordecai said to Esther, if you think that you're going to escape this because you're living in the king's palace, you've got another thing coming. And you're putting everyone at risk by staying quiet because you won't survive this. But deliverance is going to come for the Jews from someplace. But who knows if God didn't put you here for such a time as this? And what I'm saying, Tom, is God put us as believers in this world for such a time as this to support and defend the Jews. I fell in love with them before I even knew who they were. I'm still in love with them, but now I know who they are and I know what the Bible says about them. And I feel called in my life to support the Jews and also to defend the Jews. And I'm never impolite. I'm never mean-spirited, but I want to be intelligent about the issues. And that's why we wrote the book. So believers can give an intelligent response to family members, friends, whoever they are, that are spouting all these lies about Israel. We need to know the truth, and we need God put us here for such a time as this to stand with the Jewish people.
Jimmy, that was outstanding. I mean, you make me just want to buy like 50 copies of that book and pass them out to everybody, because it is nonstop where we are dealing with these things. And the lies that are said to us are obvious, but they've infiltrated the church. These people have so much influence on younger people, especially you go to church and so forth. I would encourage anybody to get the book. In it, I think you make a case, you call it Haman's template, and where you talk about the propaganda, which is what we are seeing. But before I ask about that and maybe what a couple of the lies are that are in the book, I would just encourage everybody to get this book. Jimmy, where can people get it?
Amazon.com is the best place to get it. And Amazon.com, and it releases March the 31st. And so we have both paperback and hardback cover and also the electronic version. But I really believe it'll be a good investment. By the way, Tom, we're sending this to the president, vice president, every U.S. senator, every congressman and woman, including the squad. We're sending it to every governor in the United States. We're sending it to 1,000 pastors for free. We're sending these out to help them to be equipped in the same way. We know some people won't read it, but we know it's going to get into the hands of some people who will, and hopefully it'll make a difference. So we're asking people to buy it, to give it away, but we're going on the offensive, and we're not just waiting for the leaders of the country to come by. We're going to send it out. Many pastors are anti-Semitic, and so we're going to send this book out, hopefully that lift a standard that can help to stop this to some degree.
Great. I want to encourage you all to also pray about this as this book goes out. That's just so... I'm just thankful that I get to be part of this just by supporting this work and seeing the book go out. And just a reminder for all of our viewers also, I've taught this message at Magdala many times, Magdala right there on the Sea of Galilee. Here's what's interesting is one of the people listed in Luke chapter 8 that ministers with, that comes along the side of Jesus and ministers with him. You have Mary Magdalene in there. You also have Susanna, the wife of Chuza, who's the chief steward of Herod. So you think, okay, the book, as Jimmy said, is going out to governors, it's going out to president, it's going out to congressmen, congresswomen, and maybe they won't read it, but their wife will, their husband will. And you think that is just a remarkable thought, that you never know who's going to be influenced and influential. I mean, think, the wife of the chief steward of Herod walked with Jesus. That is amazing. I just am so inspired by what you're doing with that and inspired by what you've said so far. I mean, we have a lot of ground to cover, but I'm kind of going to be stuck here for a few minutes Because I want to ask you more. What are just a couple of the lies, and then we'll move on from there. Because I have again several things I want to ask you about.
Well, you know, one of the lies is that the Jews are committing genocide against the Palestinians. In 1948, the Palestinian population of Israel was 1.4 million. Today, it's 14 million. I don't think you've ever heard of a genocide where the population grew tenfold. Okay. And so the people that are being killed in Gaza, for example, are a fraction of the population of Gaza. And remember, Hamas hides behind their people. They build their military installations in hospitals, daycare centers, all those kinds of things like that. So Israel has an army, and their army presents itself like courageous soldiers do. Hamas are a bunch of cowards. Israel does every single thing they can do not to harm civilians. They pull out leaflets, they send out text, they do everything they can to get out of harm's way. Hamas does everything they can to use their people as human shields. And so Israel has a very serious war. This is not genocide. When a population grows by tenfold, that's not called genocide. But by the way, in the Hamas charter, they call for the genocide of the Jews with no compromise. They say, we will not compromise on any way. Israel is going, we are going to destroy them from the river to the sea. We're going to kill every Jew. They are a people committed to genocide. Israel is a peace-loving people that are honoring the Jews. I mean, honoring the Palestinian people around them. They're going to murder anybody, but they have a war to fight, and it's hard to fight because of Hamas and their cowardly tactics. So one of the lies is genocide. It's absolutely false. It's just not true. You know, just the numbers speak for themselves.
I just can't help as I look at this and think that people need the tools. And even, you know, you and I both speak at conferences and go to places, and by far the majority of people who go to a conference that we're going to be speaking at support Israel, but they don't have the tools in their toolbox to be able to understand their position, how to defend their position, and why. And because these things are everywhere, and they go to a family gathering, somebody says something, and they're left with one verse, Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. And this equips folks. This will equip you. And I'm telling you, Jimmy didn't ask me to say any of these things, but I'm just so blessed by the whole idea and the concept of this book. And that I do believe it's like Jimmy has said, listen, it's for such a time as this. And here we are, an opportunity to be well equipped. Thank you, Jimmy. Again, you can get that at Amazon. And gosh, what a blessing. All right, I'm gonna move on from here because we have a lot of ground to cover in our time. You also have spoken on 10 converging end time signs. And I think it may have been also in one of your books. Maybe it's in your book with Mark Hitchcock. But in that, can you give us an overview before we dive into the few specifics?
Well, to me, Tom, the significance of the days that we're living in isn't that we're just seeing some end time signs. You know, every generation, beginning with the early church, could say, you know, Caesar's the Antichrist, you know, or we have earthquakes, we have famines, we have wars and rumors of wars, we have that. Well, first of all, we're the only generation that has Israel, okay, since 1948, when Israel was reborn. But number two, it's the convergence of signs that we're seeing. And I want to talk about a couple of signs that I think are mega signs that are happening right now. But these 10 signs, the reason that I did that message is because to help people understand, we're not seeing one or two vague signs. We are seeing the convergence of many major end time signs, which to me speak of the soon coming of Jesus. And again, we never set dates, but I don't know exactly when Jesus is coming. But my heart tells me it's very soon. And by the signs, you have to remember, a sign points to something. You know, when there's a sign, God's saying, here is a sign. So when Israel's reborn as a nation and certain things begin to happen, you have to look and say, he said that was going to happen before it happened. And now this is a sign that Jesus said, when you see these things begin to happen, look up and lift up your head. Your redemption is drawing near. And so we see those things started happening in 1948. And here we are now in 2026. These are 10 major end time signs that are happening right before our eyes. And I think that several of these are very glaring in the sense that I just don't think that we can live very much longer in this situation. And that's why Jesus said to be birth pains. Right before a woman gives birth, her most intense pain comes. The pains become closer together and more intense. That's what I see. I see closer together, more intense. Now the world situation is very, very, one-third of all Americans, not believers, one-third of all Americans believe that we're looking at some type of apocalyptic event that's going to happen here in the near future. And so that's a third of Americans, not just believers. So it's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a huge deal. Also interesting, 1948 was I don't think it's a coincidence, it was when the transistor was invented, which became the silicon chip, which, right. Both those things in 1948, what a marker was. Let's work through a few of these things. So believers scoffing at prophecy is a key sign from 2 Peter chapter 3, or I don't know if I'd necessarily say believers, but those who have claimed to be believers, the scoffing 2 Peter chapter 3, in the last days, scoffers will come walking according to their own lust, saying, where's the promise of his coming? Why do you think this skepticism exists? And I would say my experience, Jimmy, is it seems to be, especially in the church, you mentioned a third of Americans, not necessarily churchgoers, have this a view of something apocalyptic is going to happen. But I know from my experience, the majority of negative feedback I get comes from people who claim to be Christians. They're involved in the church, especially if you go to anti-Semitism. But the skepticism alone, it's ridicule and it's increasing. Why do you think that is, especially in the church?
Well, 2 Peter 3, Peter says, knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days, okay, walking according to their own lust and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. Well, here's the reason I believe that they're believers saying this. First of all, they say, where's the promise of his coming? They're not denying Jesus. They're not questioning that. They're just saying, where's the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, they're identifying themselves with either the church fathers or the fathers of the Old Testament. They're identifying themselves as being a part of the family, and they affirm creation. They affirm the fact that God created the world. So I believe these are believers, compromised believers. Remember, Tom, in Matthew 24 is all about the end times, the signs of the end times. Matthew 25, Jesus tells two parables and a true story about judgment. The virgins, the talents, and also the sheep and goat. In the parable of the virgins, there were five wise virgins and five foolish virgins. Now, they all identified themselves with the bridegroom. Okay, they all supposedly were preparing to marry the bridegroom. But when the bridegroom came, what they found out is five of them were true and had a relationship with him. But the other five that didn't have oil in their lamps, the bridegroom said to them, I don't know you. They thought they knew him. And by the way, in the sheep and goat judgment, where Jesus is judging the survivors of the tribulation based on how they treated the Jews, the goats call him Lord. They say, Lord, when did we ever see you naked? When did we ever see you thirsty? So they all called him Lord. But here's the point that I'm making. According to Jesus, when he returns, half the church will be false. I believe the virgins represent the church. We are the bride of Christ. We are going to marry Jesus Christ. It's like the parable of the wheat and the tares. You can't go and decide ourselves who's saved and who isn't. But I'm saying this. I believe that anti-Semitism is one of the factors that exposes a person's heart and if they have a genuine relationship with Jesus. Okay. And I also believe that Bible prophecy, the Bible. See, the problem, Tom, they're sitting here scoffing at the Bible. About a third of the Bible's prophecy, and most of that relates to the times we're living in. 1 in 30 verses in the New Testament refers to the coming of Jesus. This is not an obscure doctrine. This is not something, it's all over the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. Well, what they're saying here is, we don't believe the Bible. Okay? So the problem is amillennialism. It's in the church today, over half of the church is amillennial. Okay. Well, that means they don't believe in the millennium. Ah means no. They don't believe in the millennium. Well, in Revelation 20, we're told 6 times that the millennium is 1,000 years long. Satan's bound for 1,000 years. Jesus rules and reigns for 1,000 years. We're told 6 times. They don't believe that. They do not take Bible prophecy literally. They just believe it's allegorical, it's symbolic, and nobody can understand it. And they believe that today we're in the millennium where Jesus is ruling the church from heaven, and someday he may come, but it's going to be a long time from now, and nobody can know when it is. What we're teaching, what you're teaching, what I'm teaching is there's going to be the rapture of the church. There's going to be a 7-year tribulation. Jesus is going to return with us at the second coming. He's going to rule the earth with us for 1,000 years. Then there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth where we live with him for eternity. Well, they don't believe that. They believe there was a special on TBN, a series of programs on Trinity Broadcasting Network, where they had a group of pastors and spiritual leaders who were mocking end times teaching in every program, mocking what we're sitting here talking about right now and scoffing at it. Okay. And what it does to me is, if there's ever been a generation that needs to be ready for the coming of Jesus Christ, it's our generation right now. The signs of the times are screaming at us that Jesus is coming soon. And now we have most pastors in most churches that will not even preach on Bible prophecy. They won't even broach the subject. Your ministry, I know you hear the same thing. Our ministry, all the time, we hear from people saying, I'm so glad we have your ministry because my church won't talk about it. Okay. Well, this is a major end time sign. When Christians begin scoffing, that's what Peter says, in the last days, people will scoff walking according to their own lust. So anyway, that's a major sign.
Wow, that's so spot on. You've also mentioned, there's several things in here, but you've also mentioned Israel in 1948, but you include 1967. Why 1967 also?
Well, in Luke 21, Jesus is talking about the Romans invading Israel in AD 70. He said, you'll be surrounded. They're going to destroy Jerusalem, the city and the sanctuary. And Jerusalem will be trodden underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Okay. So what Jesus is saying there, when it says that Jerusalem is trodden, that means there's Gentiles ruling it. When Jews are ruling Jerusalem, it's not being trodden, it's being ruled. When Gentiles are ruling in Jerusalem, they're desecrating it. And so in 1967, when the Jews got Israel back in 1948, they didn't get Jerusalem back. And they had West Jerusalem, but it wasn't until June of 1967, the Six-Day War, that they took all of Jerusalem back. And for the first time in 1900 years, Jerusalem was fully under Israeli control the way it is today. And so that's Luke 21 is the fulfillment of Jesus' prophecy there. It's another thing that tells us a sign just happened that Jesus is coming.
So good. Third temple preparations are happening. They're happening right now. How should believers interpret this both practically and spiritually?
Well, you know, this is something that hasn't happened again for 1900 years. You've been to the Temple Institute in Jerusalem. I've been to the Temple Institute. When you walk into the Temple Institute, I took the tour. They say, everything you see here, these are not replicas. This is kosher, and this is what we're going to use in the Third Temple. Okay. They have the menorah on display in the Jewish quarter in Jerusalem. They have all the priestly garments, all the musical instruments, all of the altar instruments, everything is ready. They have the priests, they have the Levites, they have the singers. We think they may have the ashes of a red heifer. We don't know. We thought they were getting close, but they're not saying much about that. They have the cornerstone. They're ready to rebuild. In Revelation 11, John says, a measuring rod was given to me to measure the temple, but not the outer court, because it's been given to the Gentiles for 42 months, for 3.5 years. Okay, so Daniel says there's going to be an abomination of desolation by the Antichrist. Jesus, in Matthew 24, referred to Daniel and said, when you see the abomination of desolation, okay, there are people that say, oh, that was Antiochus Epiphanes in the second century BC. Jesus said in AD 33, AD 32, when you see the abomination, this is a future event, the abomination. And he said, when you see the abomination of desolation, he said, written about by the prophet Daniel, he said, then will come the greatest tribulation that the world has ever seen. And unless those days have been cut short, no flesh would survive. Those are the words of Jesus Christ talking about. And there are people right now that are post-millennial or post-trib or post-millennial, and they believe that the church is going to come into a golden age, that we're going to take over the world. And at the end of the millennium, we rule during the millennium, but Jesus is in heaven. At the end of the millennium, we deliver the world to Jesus and say, Lord, we overcame the world. You can't find me one scripture that says that. Zechariah 14 is a 3D view of the second coming when Jesus comes, defeats all the enemies that have come against Israel, and we come with him. Revelation 19 is a parallel text that shows us at the end, the world is in chaos. The world has come against Israel, and Jesus Christ himself comes and defeats all those enemies. And so this is something that we just need to understand. This is something that is so important for the church to understand, that the Bible is literal. Bible prophecy is literal. And when it says something's going to happen, it's going to happen. But many people today, many pastors and Bible teachers today, they don't take it literally.
Yeah. Do you think it's significant that we've been watching lately Jews ascending the Temple Mount?
Absolutely.
We've even seen sometimes they're even praying now. You couldn't go there just recently with a Bible, or if you were caught praying, even as a Christian, you were booted off, you know, trying to do a Bible study up there now. But that's significant to you, that these things are progressing.
Tens of thousands of Jews are going up on the Temple Mount every year now to pray. And they're not being blocked. But years ago, when we were in Israel, a Jew couldn't go to the Temple Mount. It would have caused a riot. But today, increasingly, Tom, and this is what we're saying, increasingly we're seeing the preparations made for the rebuilding of the temple. Increasingly, we're seeing an uprising among the Jews, especially the Orthodox Jews, for the rebuilding of the temple. And sometimes Christians will say, well, does the temple have to be rebuilt for the rapture to happen? No. The temple has to be rebuilt for the Antichrist to commit the abomination of desecration. And so the temple really doesn't have to be rebuilt until sometime within that first 3.5 years of the tribulation. And they're ready right now. And that's very significant.
Yeah, it just seems quite huge to me. You also talk about blood moons and solar eclipses, being discussed as heavenly signs. How literal or symbolic should we take these events, and can we read too much into some of these things?
No, they're literal. And, Joel 2 and Joel 3 is also a very important text talking about the division of the land of Israel is an end time sign. Joel 2 says, the sun will not give its light and the moon will be turned to blood before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. Okay. And that's talking about the end, the judgment comes at the end. The sun will not give its light and the moon will be turned to blood. Well, for a long time, we didn't know how to interpret that. What does that mean? Well, a pastor in Washington named Mark Biltz wrote a book called Blood Moons, and he's an astronomy buff. And he studied the NASA charts for lunar eclipses and solar eclipses. Now, a blood moon is a lunar eclipse. And so what he found out was that four times in recent history, there have been four blood moons in consecutive years, two in 1 year, two in the next year on Jewish holy days. Okay. And so the first one was in 1492 or 1493 and 1494. Well, in 1492, the Jews were expelled from Spain. Okay. Christopher Columbus was a Jew, and he was financed by a couple of wealthy Jews in Spain to find a place for Jews to live. And he just didn't come to America to find a route to the free world, the new world. He came to America to find a place for Jews to live. And so in 1492, he sailed to America. In 1493 and 1494, there were four lunar eclipses on Jewish holy days 2 years in a row, 2 1 year, 2 the next year. It didn't happen again until 1949 and 1950. Israel became a nation in 1948, but they didn't set up their government until 1949 and 1950. Four more blood moons and solar eclipses in there too on holy days, 49 and 50. It happened again in 1967, 68. 1967 is when the Jews retook Jerusalem. It happened again in 2014 and 15. It's the only time it's happened. It's happened before, but not that way. And those were very specific. So what's the deal? So here's what I believe. This is my personal interpretation. So Joel 2, talking about solar and lunar eclipses announcing the coming of Jesus. 1493 and 1994 was the beginning of the gathering of the Jewish people. It was the people. They were being scattered around the world and persecuted. And God was beginning to prepare to gather them first to America, then, ultimately to Israel. In 1949 and 50, it was about the Holy Land. It was time God was announcing. Remember, in Genesis 1, it says that God created the sun, moon, and stars for signs and for seasons. Okay. So God was announcing in 1949 and 50, we're bringing back to the Holy Land. In 1967 and 68, it was the Holy City, City of Jerusalem. In 2014 and 15, it was the Holy Temple. That was when much of the preparation for the temple began to ramp up, and when Jews were allowed to go up to the Temple Mount more and more. So 1493 and 4, 1949 and 50, 1967, 68, 2014 and 15, we have seen those blood moons and solar eclipses also, just the way that Joel 2 said we would. And so I think it's just a very significant thing. And by the way, in September 23rd of 2017, we saw the Revelation 12 sign. It was astronomically in the sky, a woman giving birth, 12 stars over her head, all of those things happening. That literally happened on September the 23rd, 2017. So Jesus said there will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars to announce his coming. We have seen that literally. These things are not figurative. They're literal. And the book Blood Moons is a really good book for people to read if they want to understand more about that.
Thank you. How can people connect with you, Jimmy?
They can go to endtimes.com. And that's the best way.
Great. And everybody, you can see it right there in the description. Also on your monitor, you can see it there, endtimes.com. Yeah. All right. I have more to ask you, but I don't have a lot of time left. Okay. And everybody, listen, he has several more signs. We won't have enough time to get to all of them, but there's several more. So I'm gonna go here. You talk about Bible chronology and rabbinical teaching suggests 6,000 years of human history are nearly complete. You also go into the technological explosion, which we don't really have enough time to get there, in the days of Noah, too. I mean, you have a lot. But just with this one thing, the chronology and rabbinical teachings and the 6,000 years of human history, I find it very intriguing. How do you work through that?
Well, so when Peter is saying in 2 Peter 3, when he is saying scoffers will come in the last days, he says, remember this one thing, that with the Lord, a day is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years is a day. Okay. Isaiah 46, God says, I'm the Lord. I declare the end from the beginning. And so Jewish rabbis have been teaching for thousands of years the 7-day theory of human history. So they believe you go back to creation, God created the world in 7 days. They believe there'll be 7,000 years of human history. 6,000 years of human history and 1,000 years when the Messiah will rule the world. Okay. So if there's going to be, Peter's talking about the end times. He's talking about scoffers coming in scoff. He says, remember something. The Lord is not slow concerning his promises, okay? But he's patient. Remember this, with the day, the Lord is 1,000 years, 1,000 years is a day. In other words, God has a stopwatch and he's looking at time. And so, if there's gonna be 6,000 years of human history, what time is it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Luke, the most important genealogy in the New Testament is in Luke, because it goes all the way from Joseph to Adam, okay? And so theologians believe there are around 4,000 years of history in the Old Testament, give or take, you know, maybe 100 years. Well, how many years have we had since then? 2026. And there's some argument about exactly when year zero was or year one was. We're at 6,000 years. I don't know exactly where we are in there, but the signs of the times that we're seeing now are very intense. Interesting also that Noah, Jesus said in Luke 17, Matthew 24, the coming of the Son of Man will be like the days of Noah. Interestingly, Noah was 600 years old when he got on the ark. That's interesting. 600. He lived over 900 years. He could have, any year he could have gotten on the ark. I believe that Noah getting on the ark at 600 years old is a sign that Jesus is going to return at the 6,000 year mark. He's going to rule the world for 1,000 years, and we're going to have 7,000 years of human history. I think the times that we're living in, some people say, well, Jimmy, why do you believe so strongly, you know, that we're the generation that God chose? We're just happen to be living when the stopwatch is running out. You know, we're the generation that I believe is seeing somewhere around the end of the 6,000 year period. But God's a God of math. God is a God. When the children of Israel left Egypt, it said they'd been there for 430 years to the day. God is very precise when it comes to time. So I think it's an important sign.
To me, it's very fascinating. I read a book many years ago. I think it was E.W. Bollinger on numbers, and it was numerology. And he wasn't necessarily getting into Bible prophecy. He was just pointing out how God has patterns. And he was this is pre-AI and everything, but he was showing how organized God is. When we start thinking of the sun, the moon, and the stars, everything is mathematical. And God works within these systems that he creates, as you mentioned already, with the signs and the sun, the moon, and the stars. And I find it very fascinating. I also look and think, okay, 1948 was a marker. Devil would know the number six is the number of man, and 6,000 years plus 1,000 years for the millennial kingdom. I don't care what anybody says, the devil knows what time it is, even if people in the church are ignoring it. Jimmy, it's been great with you today. Just a fantastic program. A couple more things, get a couple more minutes.
Absolutely. Okay.
Of the 10 signs which you feel is most urgent for the church to understand and respond to, which would you say is number one?
Antisemitism. It is a massive sign. At the end, Jesus said to a group of Jewish men, Matthew 24, you're going to be hated by all the nations. They're going to kill you, persecute you. The Jews are hated by all nations. That also refers to believers there. It's true of us also. Zechariah 12, 13, 14, you know, all through the Old Testament, especially Zechariah, the armies of the world are going to amass against Israel. The United Nations hates Israel. They have censured them more than all their nations combined. And so the world today is against Israel, but it's rising in a dramatic fashion. Major voices are crying out against Israel, condemning Israel, saying all kinds of lies. I think that is a major thing that we need to guard against, again, standing up for Israel. The other thing I say, Tom, you know, AI and anti-Semitism to me are the most major signs that we're looking at right now. Daniel 12, Daniel was told, the 12th chapter of Daniel is the last chapter of the book. It's a very, very prophetic book, end times prophetic book. And Daniel is told, seal this book up until the time of the end. And you'll know when the end has come because people will go to and fro and knowledge will increase. Well, Tom, we're looking at a tsunami of knowledge that has increased. You know, in the last 40 or 50 years, we've seen an incredible increase of knowledge. Since 2023, when AI was commercially made available, and now they're having quantum AI. And quantum AI is infinitely faster than just AI. It's artificial intelligence is a supernatural force that is going to usher in the era of the Antichrist. I believe that AI and what we're seeing right now with all the data centers and with everything happening, and it's not wrong to use AI if you use it correctly, but I'm saying that system is going to be the system that ushers in, I believe, a one world rule, because one person can't rule the world if they don't have some kind of a supernatural means to do so, and AI will give him that means.
That's really funny you mentioned that. I asked you for one sign, you gave me two. This is funny because I was on a program a couple months ago and somebody asked me for one sign, I gave him two. And I gave him the exact same two signs that you had. That's pretty funny. Real quick, we didn't talk about XO Marriage. You have that ministry. I see it all over. Explain it. Why is it important?
Well, the Lord saved our marriage. We almost divorced after several years of marriage, and the Lord saved our marriage, and we just always had a heart to help other people. And so when I was a pastor, I started writing books and doing conferences and things, and that became a television program for 25 years, my wife and I did. And today, XO Marriage is just reaching out, you know, through social media, through events, through all kinds of stuff. XOMarriage.com is where people can go. But Tom, I would just say the institution of marriage is under attack today as it's never been under attack before. Like everything else that's biblical. In 1930, 83% of adult Americans were married. Today, that's 49%. Many people in the church today are living together. Many young people are deciding not to get married. God made us for marriage. God made Adam, and he looked at Adam and said, that's not good for that man to be alone. And he created Eve. We were made for marriage. God created us for marriage. But most people are afraid of marriage because they just don't understand it. And one of the things that we do at XO Marriage, and what I say is you have a 100% chance of success in marriage when you do it God's way. Most people don't understand what God's way is. I have a book called Four Laws of Love. If they don't read anything else, they go to Amazon.com or XOMarriage.com, Four Laws of Love. I explain to you the four laws of marriage that God designed in Genesis 2, 24 and 25. That's what saved our marriage 50 years ago. And we want to help people thrive in marriage. We don't want you just to exist or survive it. We want you to thrive in marriage, and you can when you do it God's way.
Amen. Interesting you mentioned that. I had a conversation with a gentleman. It was probably 25 years ago. He came into my office for some marriage counseling, him and his wife. And he talked for a few minutes about how much he loved God, but didn't love his wife. And all I said was, that's impossible. I said, you don't love God as much as you think you do, or you would love your wife. He stood at me, he just looked at me and stared for like 15 to 30 seconds. And then he said, you're right. And he grabbed his wife's hand and he said, let's go, honey. And it was like, if you put God in the right spot, things fall into place. That is great. Thank you so much for your ministries. Again, XOMarriage.com. You can also go there. You can see the links in the description for Jimmy's ministries. Jimmy, what a delight it was having you on today. I can't wait to see you again. What a blessing. And may the Lord rich, in the words of J. Vernon McGee, may the Lord richly bless you, my beloved. God bless you, Jimmy.
And thank you so much.
We'll talk soon.
Enjoy.